Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Tes Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the top of Daf Tes Vov. Before we begin the actual Gemara text, we glance at the side where we have a mivne, a structural note, and we indicate that this marking scheme continues till Omid Beis. We're not going to spend too much time in today's shiur giving an introduction because we're relying very heavily on your being familiar with the Gemara at the end of our previous shiur. But our Mivne structural note highlights the diamond marking that you see at the opening of our Gemara, and they represent Kushos al Rebbe Yehuda. These will be challenges to Rebbe Yehuda. HaGemara Mevi'a Makoros, the Gemara will bring forth sources, Shemarim, that show, Shemuter La'odom, La'asois Hapu'ula, She'olov Yischayev, a person is allowed to do the action, the activity, that he potentially will be guilty of violation of a neder, im yavor al hatnai, if he should violate the stipulation or the condition. Why do we allow a person to, let us say, get himself into potential trouble? Why is that? Mishum di einanu choshishim shema lo yizoyer b'tnai, because we're not nervous, we're not worried that the person will be lax with regard to observing, adhering to the stipulations, to the conditions. Of course, if you're familiar with the end of our previous year, this will have made very good sense. So now we turn to the Gemara, the diamond indicating a question on Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda's approach was, as we just implied, that he is concerned with people not being careful with regard to observing the conditions, the stipulations. And so let's see, we have a source, says Tanan, Kainem. By the way, note that this is a very long question. It takes us down more than halfway down the page, as our marking indicates. Tanan, Kainem, Shani Yoshein, Shani Mahalef, Shani Medaber. And the result of that was Hare Ze Belo Yachel. The word Konam is indicative of someone accepting a restriction, it's an expression referring to a vow. In this context, it might be understood as a shvua. Hechi domi, what are the circumstances of behind this guy's vowing? In lema kidekotoni, if we're going to leave it as it is, she'ani yoshe mihavi nidra. The word konam, technically speaking, means a vow, a neder. Does a neder apply to actions? Here he's making a neder regarding sleep. He's saying that he's vowing not to sleep. But nedarim do not apply to things that are actions. They apply to articles, to physical items, to limbs. V'hotanan, have we not learned? Choymer b'shvus, sh'ashvus cholos al dover sh'yesh bo mamish, v'al dover sh'ein bo mamish. We know that shvus, oaths, have a greater application, greater stringency associated with oaths over vows, insofar as oaths, shavuos, affect whether it's items that have substance to them or even things that are not physical, as is the case with an action. As opposed to nedarim, that's masha'en ken nedarim, the nedarim, as the word konam would indicate, that we're dealing with a neder, with a vow. Nedarim don't have any effect on things that are non-physical. Vishina, the issue of sleep, dover shein bo mamashu, it's in the category of something that's not an item, an actual article. It's something that has no substance. It's an action. Ela, so what must be? De omar kainim einai bashina. The person focused the vow on his eyes. The eyes are a limb of a person, and as such, they are a dover shiyesh bo mamash, and the vow can take effect. However, we're still not clear yet on things. As the Gemara points out, the ida lo yohiv shiura, if he didn't give a limitation to the vow of non-sleep, mi shavkinon le ad ovar isur bal yachel, would we allow the person to continue to utter such a vow until he actually falls asleep, which is an inevitability when you're dealing with people? Vamar Rabbi Yochanan, shvua shlo ishan shloishi yomim, if a person would swear that he's not going to sleep for 3 days, malkin oisoi v'yoshein la'alter, we lash him for violating a shvuas shav, for violating a meaningless oath, for uttering a meaningless oath, and he has the option of going to sleep immediately. The idea of swearing not to sleep, and even if you associate it or assign a time frame of 3 days, no one can possibly stay awake for 3 full days. Elo di Omar, in order for the vow concerning non-sleep to make sense, it must have been the following. Just a detail before we continue in the Gemara. The Ran explains that when the Gemara had said Malkinos of Yoshin Lealter, a vow that's open-ended, that he restricts his eyes from sleep, is not a vow that would even take effect. It's a meaningless statement. So we continue in the Gemara. Elo di Omar. So what did take place? Kainim einai b'shina l'mochar im ishan hayom. So the case would be where he prohibits his eyes from sleep tomorrow if he sleeps today. So the actual vow concerns tomorrow's sleep. When would tomorrow's sleep even become an issue? If he sleeps today. The Gemara says, now that can't be the case though. Ha amris, but we already said, and this was what we saw at the top line, was the last point we saw in our previous shiur, we already said, kol be'isurei mizdaher. When it comes to tomorrow's sleep as being the subject of the vow, there won't be any possibility, there won't be a chance of his coming to Bal Yachel, because he will be very careful. That was the principle that we lay down at the top line. That's why you see arrows to the side of the Gemara text. When it comes to the Isura, the actual vow itself, the actual vow concerns tomorrow's sleep. Well, when tomorrow comes, you're going to rest assured he's not going to go to sleep. So that wouldn't be the subject of the Mishnah where the diamond appeared, which had concluded Hareze Belo Yachel. Elo Pshita, so rather, what must be the case of the Mishnah? Yomar koinim einai b'shino hayoim im ishan l'mohar. He prohibits his eyes from sleep today if he sleeps tomorrow. V'i delonayim hayom, if you're going to follow the approach of Rav Yehuda, now what would Rav Yehuda have said about a case like this where he says, kainim einai b'shino hayoim, imi shan l'mochar? Remember, Rav Yehuda said people aren't going to be so careful when it comes to maintaining or adhering to conditions. So what would Rav Yehuda have told this guy? He says, you know what? You better not sleep today, because I'm not so sure that if we would allow you to sleep today, that you're going to be very careful with the non-sleeping tomorrow. So the Gemara says, if Rav Yehuda's approach is correct, that we don't let him sleep today, kinayim lamachar, my balyachil devaruika. If he does go to sleep tomorrow, what neder violation is there? The neder is, in this case, with regard to today's sleep. If he doesn't sleep today, then even if he does sleep tomorrow, where is there any evidence of balyachil? Balyachil is the prohibition of violating a neder. But according to Rav Yehuda's scheme, there's not going to be any neder violation. Elola b'dinayim. In order for level 4, for case 4, to come to a neder violation, it must be that we allow him to sleep today. And we rely on him being careful not to sleep tomorrow. In other words, we rely on him to be careful with regard to the tanai. Alma, the result of all of this is Isay, Denayim, there is sleeping today, Utyufta de Rav Yehuda, and this would be a refutation of Rav Yehuda. The double underline is explained on the side under the Mivneh heading, Tyufta or Kashya al Rav Yehuda. These are points in the Gemara where the challenge to Rav Yehuda comes to a head. Because, as we said, we'll just repeat, Rav Yehuda said we don't let him sleep today because he might not adhere to the Tanai. But if we don't let him sleep today, there's no Bal Yachel, there's no possibility of coming to a vow violation. The Gemara answers, Ki Kotoni, the Mishnah that says, Hareze Belo Yachel, that's De'i Nayim. If he violated my ruling, says Rav Yehuda. We take a look at the Rashi. You'll notice a few lines down in the Rashi, there's a star that we've drawn into the Rashi. Omar Loch Rav Yehuda, Hachi Kotoni Masnisin. Thusly, one should understand the Mishnah. Koinim einai b'shino hayoim yimishan lomochar de osur kinayim lomochar de inayim me'esmol de eved. Avo lichatchila ein manifin oisoy lishan hayom de chayshinon shemo yishan lomochar. So Rashi explains what Rav Yehuda is telling us is that the Mishnah is saying that one who banned his eyes through a vow with regard to today's sleep, if he should sleep the next day, there will be a violation of the vow if he sleeps tomorrow, if he had slept today. But notice, if he had slept today. But as far as the preferred approach, says Rav Yehuda, the Mishnah itself acknowledges, like I say, he shouldn't lechatchila sleep today. Ravina, a second approach, Omar, li oilom kidikotoni. Leave the Mishnah text as it is, namely, kainim shani yoshein. Ah, we ask if you leave it as it is, Shani Yoshein, and as opposed to Kainim Einai Bashina, well, sleep is a Dover Shein Bo Mamish. How could the source then go on to say Harezeh Bebal Yachel, that there is the there would be a violation of a neder when there isn't any neder to begin with? So the Gemara explains, Umay Bal Yachel. What does Bal Yachel of the Mishnah mean, Midorabonan? A rabbinic vow violation. But on a Torah level, that is true. There is no vow violation because Kainim Shani Yoshein is a neder on something that's not physical. It refers to sleep. Gemara asks, "Umi iko bal yachel midrabbanan? Is there such a thing as a rabbinic bal yachel?" Gemara answers, "In yes, v'hatanya, and support to this. Dvorim amutarim, v'achirim noagbu an iser. Things that are by letter of the law allowed, but others accepted upon themselves a restriction. Iatorashoy lahatiron b'fneim. You cannot practice openly in front of them things." Practices or behaviors that they accepted upon themselves a restriction. And the basis of that is Shenemar lo yachel devoro, don't violate what they have accepted. That, of course, is a rabbinic take on things, because you can see we've indicated that you're dealing with things that are actually allowed, and still we're telling you not to do them because these are practices or customs in a place where they accepted restriction upon themselves. So you see this idea of lo yachel dvoro, though it's a pasuk in the Torah, is a reference to something rabbinic. Tanan, a second challenge to Rabbi Huda. Konam she'at nehenesli. I added the word konam because that's what precedes that which the Gemara itself presents in the text. But the husband had said to his wife that you will be prohibited for me to benefit from konam shatnenisli ad ha-pesach, any benefit that I would receive from you till Pesach, im teilchi lebeis avich an hachag. So imagine he's standing in the month of Adar, a month before Pesach, and he says that he restricts himself in neder terms from any benefit he would receive from his wife until Pesach. If, and here's the condition, if she goes to her father's house until Ad HaChag, until Sukkot, 6 months later. In other words, the whole time period for the condition to operate is from now till Sukkot. Holcha lefnei HaPesach, asura b'hanosoi ad HaPesach. If she went to her father's house before Pesach, then he cannot benefit from her until Pesach. That's as far as the source is concerned. Holcha lefnei ha-Pesach asura. Just a technical adjustment. The husband is preventing his wife from receiving any benefit from him until Pesach if she should go to her father's house until Sukkot. So the source said if she were to go to the father's house, if she should actually go to the father's house before Pesach, So she cannot get any benefit from the husband until Pesach. She's already, by going to her father's house, she's activated the neder. She's put the neder into motion. And the neder says, the vow says that she is not entitled to receive any benefit from her husband until Pesach. So the Gemara's points out that Hochol lefnei Pesach Asura, if she in fact went to her father's house before Pesach, so that activated the neder, and no hana can be enjoyed from her husband. However, lo holcha lo. That means as long as she has not gone to her father's house, she is entitled to benefit from her husband. But isn't there the fear, isn't there a condition here that she might go to her father's house up till Sukkot time? And bear in mind, if she should go to her father's house any time up till Sukkot, retroactively, all benefits that she was receiving from her husband would constitute a violation of the vow. And yet, we're not worried about that. The only time we say she cannot benefit is if she actually goes to her father's house. But as long as she hasn't actually gone to her father's house, we're not worried she might come to violate the condition. That's a question, that's a problem for Rav Yehuda. The Gemara answers, Omer Rav Yehuda, Holcho lefnei ha-Pesach, Asur v'loke, v'loka. That means if she actually goes to her father's house before Pesach and benefited from her husband, she will get lashed for that benefit. Lo holcha, if she has not gone to her father's house, then we will tell her asura bi'alma. It nevertheless is still usur for her to benefit from her husband until Pesach, because we are worried she might go to her father's house up till Sukkot time, just like Rav Yehuda. So all the source was talking about when it said Pesach, that means that isur hanor referred to is an isur that will result in actual lashings, being that she actually had gone to her father's house. But just to repeat ourselves, if she hasn't gone to her father's house up till Pesach, nevertheless, that entire time period, we will not allow her to enjoy benefits from her husband, because she might end up going to her father's house up till Sukkot. The Gemara continues, Ema Seifa. This is introduced as a third question on Rabbi Yehuda. What does it say in the Seifa? Achar HaPesach, that means if she went to her father's house after Pesach, Bebal Yachel Dvoro, she is in violation of the vow. But the Dolo is Hani Lefnei HaPesach. If you're going to accept Rav Yehuda's approach, as Rabbi Abba explained the source, namely that prior to Pesach we will not have allowed her to receive any benefit from her husband, then Mi'iko Bal Yachel, is how could there be any vow violation? Bal Yachel is the pasuk Lo Yachel Dvoro. What vow violation would there have been? In order to understand the Seifa, it must be that we're describing a woman that had received benefit from her husband. And therefore, if she goes to her father's house after Pesach, prior to Sukkot, and so there, of course, there is a vow violation. But what's the point for us? Almo Mishani, we see that we do allow her to derive benefit from her husband before Pesach. having relied on her being careful not to go to her father's house. We continue at the top of Omid Beis, Utyufta de Rav Yehuda, and again, this would be a refutation of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda answers, Ki Kotoni, the source, is telling us a case, De'i ishani, hare ze bebal yachel devoro. If she had benefited from her father, from her husband, not that we allow her lechatchila to benefit from her husband, we don't. Because, as Rav Yehuda said, we are worried she might violate the condition. If she didn't adhere to our teaching, and she did benefit from the husband before Pesach, so of course, if she goes to her father's house after Pesach, before Sukkot, she will retroactively be in violation of Lo Yachel Devoro. However, the Gemara is insistent on asking another question. So you see the second line from the top of Amud Beis, question number 4. Tanan. Again, we add the word konam in order to appreciate the case a little more. Konam sha'at nenesli ad hachag. Im teuchi lebeis ovich ad hapesach. The husband prevents through a vow from prevents his wife from benefiting from him until Sukkot, if she goes to her father's house up till Pesach. So here the condition of not going to father's house is a shorter period of time. She's restricted in visiting her father's house up till Pesach. The vow period will cover, though, from now till all the way till Sukkot. Halcha lefnei haPesach asura b'hanosoi ad hachag. If she went to her father's house before Pesach, so she will not be allowed to benefit from her husband until Sukkot. Umuteres leilech achar haPesach. She'll be allowed to go to her father's house after Pesach. The whole restriction of her visiting her father's house was only up till Pesach. Now, we take note of this source. Holcha Asura. The source said that if she went to her father's house before Pesach, if she actually went to her father's house, so then she's not allowed to benefit from her husband. Lo holcha, lo. If she didn't actually go to her father's house, we allow her to derive benefit from her husband. Even though there is a fear that she might, in fact, go to her father's house. So what do we see from here? We allow her to derive benefit, relying on her being careful about adhering to the conditions. That is not like Rav Yehuda. The Gemara responds, Omar Rava, hu hadin da'afilu lo holcha asura. The truth is that even if she hadn't gone to her father's house, we still would restrict her from benefiting from her husband, like Rav Yehuda. But as far as the source is concerned, holcha, if she actually went to her father's house prior to Pesach, asura v'loka, she is forbidden to benefit from her husband, and if she does, she will be subject to lashes because that's an actual violation of the neder. Lo holcha, if she doesn't go to her father's house, if she hadn't gone to her father's house yet before Pesach, asura b'yalmo, in accordance with Rav Yehuda, we would tell her, do not benefit from your husband. Again, let me just repeat that last point. Do not benefit from your husband because you might end up violating the terms, the condition of not going to visit your father till Pesach. Meisvei. Again, a challenge to Rav Yehuda. Kikar zu olai hayom Im eilech lemokom ploni lemochar. So the vow concerns a particular loaf. He vows that the loaf shall be prohibited to him today. If he ends up going to such and such a place tomorrow. Ochal hareze beval yelech. Upon eating the loaf, he is now restricted to go to the that place tomorrow. Now the thinking right now is that from this source we see that it's mutter for a person to eat the loaf, and he will be careful to adhere to the condition of not going to that place tomorrow. That would be a challenge to Rav Yehuda, because Rav Yehuda's approach to such a case would be, listen, don't eat the loaf today. You know why? Because we're afraid you might not adhere to the condition and end up going to that such and such place tomorrow. The Gemara responds, Mikotani Ochel, does the source say, go ahead, lechatchila, and eat the loaf because we're so confident that you will adhere to the condition? Ochal kotani. The source speaks about a person who post facto happened to eat the loaf. Dechi ochal, if he violates what we would have told him and he did eat the loaf, then hare zeh beval yelech, then he is certainly prohibited from going to that such and such place tomorrow. But lechatchila, but as a first choice, we would tell him, don't eat the loaf today because we are concerned, we're worried you might not adhere to the condition, as Rav Yehuda teaches. And finally, number 6. Holach harei zeh beval yachel devoro. This is a question on Rav Yehuda. According to Rav Yehuda, We were told, according to Rav Yehuda, the person would not have eaten the loaf the previous day. Now, if he had not eaten the loaf the previous day, so then why on the morrow, when he goes to that place, is he in violation of anything? So what do we see from here? That we allowed him to eat the loaf the previous day, not like Rabbi Huda. We have to keep reading another two words in the Gemara to really see the impact of this question. The source says, "Holach harei zeh bebal yachel dvaro." Mehalech lo. It doesn't say go ahead and go there tomorrow. Whereas according to Rav Yehuda, who would have forbidden the eating of the loaf the day before, the source could have read Mehalech. He is able to go to such and such place the next day because he would not have eaten the loaf on the previous day. The Kashil Rav Yehuda. From this source, we see once again a problem for Rav Yehuda, because according to Rav Yehuda, we would have been able to teach Mehalech Lamokom Ploni Omar Loch Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda responds, Hu Adin Delisni Mehalech. Truth is that if a person had said Kikar Zu Alai Hayom, he would have been able to go to the next, a person who had said, Kikar zu alai hayom, imelech lemokom ploni lemochar, we would have been able to tell him, mehalech lemokom ploni, because he would not have eaten it the day before. So why does the source use the term holach, which is only post facto and not lechatchila? So Rav Yehuda says it could have taught Mehalech. However, Aidi de Kotoni Reisha Ochal, since the Reisha speaks about a person who had eaten the loaf the day before, the lo misni le ochel, it couldn't have taught in the source, go ahead and eat, lechatchila, because according to Rav Yehuda, he is not supposed to eat on that day, on the hayom. Therefore, to keep the language balance, Tani Seifa Holach. Just to repeat that once again, since in the Reisha it says Ochal Hare Ze Beval Yelech, the Seifa uses a similar verb form, past tense, Holach Hare Ze Beval Yachel Devoro. But the source could have said Mihalech the next day, because technically speaking, he will not have eaten the loaf on the day before, in compliance with Rav Yehuda. As we go on, we have a quote from the Mishnah: "Hoymer Lisha Koinim Shani Mishamshech Hareze Bebal Yachel Dvoro." The topic heading that we see on the side under the Nosei reads Koinim Tashmishi Olecha. A woman vows to prevent her husband from benefiting from intimacy that she has with him. Ein haneder chal d'hamishubed la. The hamishubed la. She's mishubedis to him. In fact, we will see this is a two-way street. This topic heading could just as well read Kainin Tashmishi Olayech, where a husband tries to prevent his wife, restrict his wife from benefiting from his intimacy with her. The neder doesn't get off the ground because he is bound to her. The Gemara. Ha'imer Lisha, Kainim Shani Mishamshech. A man says to his wife, through a vow that he will not provide her with intimacy. Hareze bebal yachel dvoro. Well, if he does, so then he's in violation of the vow. The Gemara asks, how can he be in violation of a vow that doesn't even get started? The ha mishtabid lo midoraisa dichtiv sharok susavo inosa lo yigora. From this pasuk, without getting into the details and the background of the pasuk, from this pasuk we learn that a husband must provide his wife with ona. Ona is intimacy. So he can't vow not to provide her with something that he is previously obligated to do. So why is it that a man who says to his wife, I prohibit you through a vow from benefiting from my intimacy? So the Gemara answers, Be'oimer, the husband phrases it in the following fashion. Hanoas tashmisheich olai. V'ha lo konicho le betashmish. He vows regarding himself not to benefit from the tashmish, from the intimacy that she has with him. So there's a very fine difference, but it makes all of the difference. He cannot project upon her prohibition from tashmish. He is obligated to provide her with tashmish. However, he is able to restrict himself from the enjoyment of having the intimacy that he's obligated to provide to her. So now, as a result of the intimacy that he will have to provide for her, he is thereby getting himself into trouble because of the vow that he made. And when we have a situation like that, so one has to realize that there will be a prohibition, but there is also a vow that has set in. The Rashi points out in the wide lines, "Avol bi'oimer hanoas tashmishech olai klomar hanoa de osi li mitashmishech the benefit, the pleasure that comes to me through intimacy that I have with you, kinum alai, is prohibited unto myself, unto me, as a vow. Rashi continues, v'holo nicholei b'tashmisha, v'yocholei esor hana'osa olav. He's able to prohibit himself from that pleasure, v'have neder, and there is a vow. And hence, in such a case, though he may very well be obligated to provide her with the intimacy, if he does have the intimacy with her, he will be in violation of the vow. The Gemara goes on with an illustration of this from the opposite standpoint, where we will see the vow of this, a vow of this nature takes effect. The Omar Rav Kahana, Tashmishi Olecha. Here the woman is the speaker, and she's saying that the intimacy with her husband is to be prohibited. Well, we say, Kaifen oiso mishamashtoi de shibude mishabedis law. We force her to have intimacy with him because she has no right to prohibit her husband from benefiting from intimacy with her. She's obligated to provide that for him. However, hanoas tashmishcha olai aser. A woman who prohibits herself from enjoying the intimacy that she will have with her husband, that vow takes effect. She'ein ma'achilin lo le'odom dover osulo. We don't feed a person something that is prohibited to him. Now, so what's the result of this? Let's take a look at Rashi. Avo omra kainum tashmishcha olai she'isiris hano she'ishlo mitashmisho alatzma. She prohibits herself from benefiting from the intimacy. So that husband is not allowed to have intimacy with her because in effect he's going to be causing her to be in violation of her vow, and he has to absolve her of that vow. We don't feed a person something that's prohibited to him. The benefit that she has from the intimacy her husband provides to her is forbidden to her. Hachinami, so too in our original case, ki omar hanos tashmishech olai, when the husband says the pleasure I get from your intimacy that you have with me, vade have neder, it is certainly a vow, the osur lishamsha, and it's prohibited for him then to have intimacy with her, but nay shinehen mimeno, because he is having pleasure from it, and he prohibited, he banned himself from having that pleasure. So just to summarize this last discussion, we thought we had a confrontation between two forces. On the one hand, the vow not to provide intimacy to one's spouse, that type of vow shouldn't be able to get off the ground because the spouse is obligated to provide that to their partner. On the other hand, the Mishnah indicated that a vow concerning this issue does get off the ground. So the Gemara explained, it all depends on how the vow is phrased. And in the final analysis, when a partner in the married couple prohibits themselves from benefiting from the tashmish, that kind of vow takes place, and the intimacy will therefore be prohibited, and immediate measures must be taken to absolve, to rescind that particular vow. We have a Mishnah, which will take us till the end of this particular Omid. And then the Gemara continues at the top of Tes Zayin Mon Aleph to figure out who is the author of this Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Shvua she'eni yoshen, she'eni medaber, she'eni mehalech. Usher, person vows, or I should say he swears, he takes an oath, not to sleep, not to speak, not to walk. Usher means it is a binding shvua. And Rashi points out that shvuos take effect on the non-physical as well, on actions as well as physical things. Korban loy oicheloch, ha korban she oicheloch, loy korban loy oicheloch, mutter. These three expressions would not result in a vow taking hold. It appears that had he said korban oicheloch, which is not one of the examples here, that would be binding. This will be a point that will have relevance later on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis in Amir Tzah Shem in our next shiur. Let us take a look at the Ran commentary that you find at the very bottom line of the Ran on the Mishnah. Korban lo'eicheloch, ho korban she'eicheloch. And the next is, Ran has here, la korban, our girsa is, lo korban, loy oicheloch mutter. Mishum, dechi omar, korban loy oicheloch, the first expression here, when he says, korban, lo oicheloch, the Ran continues at the top of Tezainam at Aleph, I amrinon, the Bechaye Korban Mishtaba, if you say that this is a vow in the life of the sacrifice, sorry, that type of vow doesn't get started. The Korban Lav Barash Debuyahu. A Korban is not something that you can take a, is not something that lends itself to an oath. V'yamrinon, and if you interpret the expression as the korban yehei ma shelo ochal mishelcha ka'omar nami shori, if you take these words and say and understand them as the fellow is saying it shall be a korban. A korban is a sacrifice, something that is sanctified, something that's prohibited. So prohibited shall be that which I do not eat from you. So what is being banned? That which I don't eat from you is being banned. So everything is allowed. Delo shavi isur korban elo mashalo yochal. That which he doesn't eat is made usur, but that which he does eat is allowed. So that's why the Mishnah says, regarding the first phrase, korban, lo ochalach, is mutter, either it's not an expression of a shvua, or it just doesn't reflect any restriction to begin with. The next phrase of the Mishnah, ha korban she'ochalach, the Ran explains, nami shori. If a person says that phrase, ho korban shocholoch, that's allowed. Dechaye korban komar. He's swearing in the life of the korban. The oven inish the mishtababe velo midi komar. People speak like that, but it doesn't have any meaning. Let us skip the bracketed section that we have written into the, that we've drawn into the Ran, to skip down to number 3, le korban, or lo korban, lo ochaloch, nami shari, that expression, the Ran's girsa is not exactly like our Mishnah. We had the word lo, the Ran has a lamed, but he reads it with a pasach. The Kevon de Balamid Psucho Komar La Korban Lo Chamach. We've seen this quite often in the past. It really is Lo Korban Mashma. So, not a Korban. I will not be eating from you. Velekol Lemeimar de Michla Lav Mashma. And there isn't any room to say here that, well, let's from the negative infer the positive, which would be ha mashe yochal yehi korban, that which I do eat from you shall be prohibited. Ha masni k'Rabbi Meir ukmin okim no la. The Gemara will be setting up our Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir ha lesle michla lava toshomein, as we've seen so many times before. Rabbi Meir doesn't accept that method of drawing conclusions, of inference. According to Rabbi Meir, if you want to present a topic in the negative and in the positive, you don't leave things for inference, but you spell both sides out, which our Mishnah did not do. The Gemara continues now at the top of Tezayin Amud Aleph, Moni Masnisin. Who is the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Meir he. The Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir. D'i Rabbi Yehuda, if it were in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, lo shoni le korban, velo shoni le ha korban. Rabbi Yehuda would make no distinction between korban versus HaKorban. In order to appreciate this, we should look at Rashi on Tesvav Amid Beis, Dibra Masel Lo Korban. So let's together read the Rashi there. Lo Korban Lo Ochalach Mashma Bishvil Isur Ko'omar Korban Lo Ochalach Sheim ochelach lehevei osro like a korban. The person's goal here was to impose a restriction, and what he is saying, therefore, not a korban, that which I don't eat from you, which implies that that which I do eat from you should be unto me like a korban. Umuter, the Mishnah ruled that it's mutter the time of the Rabbi Meir, the less lay michlal lav, as we explained just before in the Ran. So that the Mishnah, you can see, is in accordance with Rabbi Meir, because in order to come up with a restriction, he would have had to spell out korban she'ochaloch. De'i Rabbi Yehuda, if you were to think that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, Bein Omar Korban She'oichaloch, Bein Omar Ho Korban She'ochel, Betravayu Matir Rabbi Yehuda. Now, bear in mind, our Mishnah did not say Korban She'oichaloch Mutter. That was not one of the examples. And we pointed this out when we were learning the Mishnah, that had he said Korban Shocholach, that would have been Usher. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, whether he says Korban Shocholach or Ho Korban Shocholach, B'Travayu Mati Rabbi Yehuda, Afilu Omar Korban Shocholach, Kidamrino B'Pirkan D'Liel, as we said in the previous perek, Korban HaKorban Kid Korban Shocholach Usher, and we said Moni Rabbi Meir he. That teaching is in accordance with Rabbi Meir. The lo shoni le bein imra le ke imra. Rabbi Meir made no distinction whether there was a prefix or not. To the Rabbi Yehuda, korban she'oichaloch mutter. According to Rabbi Yehuda, in order for the neder to take hold, you would have to say ke korban. You'd have to have had a prefix ke korban she'oichaloch mutter. So, after all said and done, there's a great deal of, we'll say, reading between the lines or inferring things from the Mishnah in order to come to this conclusion that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir. So to repeat the proof of the Gemara, at the end of the Mishnah we had seen several phrases involving Korban, but and they were all mutar. There was no vowel that set in. However, had it said korban urchaloch, that would have been a binding vow. And that, again, that wasn't spelled out, but we're inferring that. And that inference shows us that the Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe Meir. Because according to Rebbe Yehuda, even an expression like korban she'ochaloch, would not be binding because of the lack of the prefix. The Gemara continues after having arrived at the thinking that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe Meir. Amos Seifa, la korban lo oicholoch muter. That was what we saw in the Mishnah. Vehotnan la korban lo oicholoch. Rebbe Meir oser. We've seen this in another Mishnah in the past, that if a person says le korban lo ochaloch, Rabbi Meir holds that that is a vow. V'yomer Rabbi Abba, how is that a vow? Nase ka'imer, if a person says what's in the frame, it's understood to be as follows: le korban yehei, lefikach lo ochaloch, that unto me the food should be a korban, and therefore I cannot eat from your food. So therefore, the seifa of our Mishnah, why, if it's in accordance with Rebbe Meir, why is the result mutter? When he says, le korban lo ochaloch, why isn't it understood as le korban yehei, and therefore lo ochaloch? Lo kashya. There isn't any contradiction here. Ha diomar le korban. Ha diomar loy le korban. The lo have a korban komar. The Mishnah, namely our Mishnah, is to be understood or to be read as loy le korban lo ochelach. There, he's spelling out in no uncertain terms, not a korban. That's the lo havi korban. So there's no. So the only way to come to some type of restriction there would be through inference, and we've already explained before that according to Rebbe Meir, we don't arrive at any conclusions through inference. The source where Rebbe Meir, where it said Rebbe Meir Oser, that's because he didn't say lo korban, he says le korban. And that leaves room for Rebbe Abba's interpretation, namely, le korban yehei, therefore lo ochelach. Le korban can be understood as in the positive. It shall be as a korban, therefore that which I eat from you will be prohibited. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.